Welcome to The Extra, the show connecting you with the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And this month, we are focusing on melanoma awareness. It is National Melanoma Awareness Month. It's appropriate that it's at the start of the summer because so many folks are sinking into those summer plans, and a lot of it involves outdoor activities in the sun, those rays baking down on us, but you need to protect yourself so that you can avoid the danger and risks of melanoma, which is a cancer. Joining us today to talk more about melanoma, being aware of it, the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention is Dr. Jeffrey Lim of Optum, a board-certified dermatologist and Mohs Micrographics trained, fellowship-trained surgeon. Dr. Lim, welcome to the show.
Pleasure being here, Shannon. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we have so much to talk about today, but let's just kick it off. Let's talk about, you know, defining for our audience, for our listeners who may be unaware, what is melanoma?
Sure. Well, melanoma is certainly something to be taken seriously, and that's why we have a month designated to skin cancer awareness, but also melanoma awareness. It's a serious form of skin cancer that begins in cells known as melanocytes, and those are just the cell types that produce pigment in our skin. And while it's less common than the most common types of skin cancer, basal cell carcinoma and squamous cell carcinoma, melanoma is more dangerous because of its ability to spread to other organs more rapidly if it's not treated at an early stage.
So it can be a serious disease.
Certainly, and that's what gives it, you know, attention in our field, because of its ability to be spreading throughout the body. It's so important to detect it early. And 90% of all melanomas that are detected by dermatologists are found early. So, and that's defined as either on the surface of the skin where they begin, or minimally invading into the skin. So when we talk about invasion, it just talks about how deep into the skin does the melanoma reach. And it's that information after biopsy or sampling of the skin that tells us how we can predict its behavior and how aggressive a melanoma can be.
Are there specific causes? I mean, we hear about wearing sunscreen, so definitely protection from the sun, but also who is more susceptible to it?
Well, that's a great question. Most people who develop melanoma are of fairer skin types. So not just the blonde hair, blue eyes, you know, phenotype or appearance, but just also people that have, you know, we categorize folks based on the propensity to have a sunburn. And that correlates with fair complexion. So, you know, folks with the fairest types of skin who have the propensity to get sunburned easily have a higher likelihood of developing melanoma in their lifetime than, say, individuals with darker complexions, folks who are African-American, Black, even Hispanic or of Asian descent have a little bit less propensity to burn. But it doesn't mean that they can't get melanoma, and there are certain subtypes of melanoma that we look out for to counsel all patients about because of their risk.
Last year, I have to say that this month, it really was the spark that I needed to go in and get checked for a couple of moles. Turned out to be nothing, but I felt so much relief after doing it. And it had been this sort of uncertain concern that I had because, you know, a lot of people don't really know what a melanoma looks like. Why don't you describe
right.
what they look like?
Sure. Well, it's not always easy, and that's why, you know, we encourage folks, especially who have a lot of moles on their body, to go see their board-certified dermatologist, because that's what we're trained to do. But just as a way to kind of figure out what to look for, I mean, melanoma, it arises from basically the pigment cells, melanocytes, that cluster together and arise what we call de novo from new skin or from existing atypical appearing moles. So what do those look like? And the easiest way to remember what to look for is just with the alphabet soup that we describe in the office called the ABCDE warning signs. So the first five letters of the alphabet can be used as a guide to warn for the signs of atypical moles and melanoma. So jumping right in, A is for asymmetry. So most melanomas are asymmetrical. And if you draw a line through the middle of the lesion and the two halves don't match, it looks different from a round oval or something symmetrical, then that's a warning sign. B is for borders. So borders tend to have this unevenness. So if you cannot find or distinguish where the lesion starts or stops, that is also a red flag. C for color. So multiple colors are a warning sign in and of itself. Most benign moles, things not that you don't have to worry about, are a single shade of brown or tan. But melanoma can have many different shades of brown, tan, or even black. And as it grows and the lesion matures, sometimes we lose pigment. Red, white, or blue may also appear. So C for color. D is for diameter. And the easiest way to remember diameter is think of a pencil eraser. Pencil eraser is about 6 millimeters in size or a quarter inch in diameter. So if you can cover your moles with a pencil eraser, that tends to be a good sign. Now, I will say a caveat here is that diameter and size is not a perfect metric by any means, especially if one has more than 100 moles. And you might say, well, wow, 100's a lot. But in fact, when, you know, skin being the largest organ of our body, 100's really not so densely populated. So just remember D for diameter. And then E is probably the most important letter. If you're going to remember one thing from this talk, E for evolving or evolution. And that's really any change in those features I've already described, whether it be size, shape, color, or elevation of a spot of your skin, or any new symptom, such as bleeding, itching, or crusting. That may be a warning sign. And so those are all good reasons to pick up the phone and talk to your primary care, either for a referral or just call directly to your board-certified dermatologist.
Oh, very important information there and recommendations. And we have much more to talk about as we are raising awareness of melanoma, of the risks, treatment, diagnosis, much more ahead here on The Extra. Keep it right here on KRDO News Radio. We're back with Dr. Jeffrey Lim, board-certified dermatologist and Mohs Micrographics fellowship-trained surgeon. Dr. Lim, so glad you could be here with us on The Extra to talk about melanoma awareness.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about melanoma, because that is our focus during National Melanoma Awareness Month. Can melanoma be cured, Dr. Lim?
Fortunately, it can, Shannon. In fact, 90% or in excess of 90% of all the melanomas that are diagnosed by board-certified dermatologists are diagnosed early, and that's great because early melanoma is defined as lines superficially on the skin or what we say minimally invasive, meaning melanoma, the risk of melanoma spreading through the body and becoming a problem is correlated directly with how deeply into the skin the melanoma extends. And so when it's early invasive, meaning very shallow, it is 100% curable. Across all stages of melanoma, whether it be early or late, the average 5-year survival rate in our country, the U.S., is 93%. And the 5-year survival rate for patients whose melanoma is detected early is about 99%. So very curable. But that survival rate falls to about 66% when the disease reaches local lymph nodes, and certainly much less than that when it metastasizes or spreads throughout the rest of the body.
What is the difference between early stage and late stage melanoma?
That's a great question. Going back to the depth of invasion that the melanoma is characterized by, we call that the Breslow thickness. And the Breslow thickness differentiates in most staging criteria early and late. So again, superficial melanoma, otherwise called melanoma in situ, or stage one, meaning less than 0.8 millimeters or 0.8 to 1 millimeter depth into the skin, is defined as early stage. Late stage is really, you know, or intermediate to late stage is anything beyond that level of depth in the skin. And certainly late stage includes those melanomas that have left the primary site in the skin and go to either regional local lymph nodes or distant organs throughout the body.
And are those melanomas, may I ask, are they hard or are they more skin-like texture? I mean, would you notice them running your fingers across them?
Well, you know, they come, unfortunately, they come in all different shapes, sizes, textures, especially as they advance and progress. Kind of going back to what we discussed just a week ago, the features you could look for, those are really the things to look out for beyond just how it feels. There's really no correlate between, you know, whether it's hard or soft tissue-like, or if it feels like a grape or peanut M&M. What I will say, though, is that when you have an intermediate to late-stage melanoma, the lymph nodes that we counsel patients to really identify from the spread of disease feel like a grape, olive, or peanut M&M that's kind of just underneath the surface of the skin that is often very firm and immobile. So that's just kind of one tidbit. But we hope that we get the melanoma treated much earlier than that.
What types of treatments exist for melanoma?
Well, there's many different treatments, but by far and away, the treatment that matters the most is removing the affected skin at the primary site. So for in excess of 90% of the melanomas that we see, it's excising or surgically removing the affected skin. And that historically had been done with what we call wide local excision, meaning what you would see on the skin, you could identify, and then in order to be confident that you had all of the cancer out, you would have to take a wide margin, anywhere from 1 to 2 centimeters around the melanoma, just to be sure that it's gone. And when you imagine 1 to 2 centimeters all the way around the circumference of the lesion, that's quite a large wound to deal with and then subsequently repair. So with the advent of Mohs micrographic surgery, we've been able to do two things. One is achieve higher cure rates by looking at 100% of those cells under the microscope, but also conserve as much normal skin as possible. And folks really sometimes don't, it's hard to wrap your head around that. It seems counterintuitive. But we take less tissue, but we have higher cure rates. But it's really inserting real-time evaluation under the microscope that makes all the difference.
And is this sort of treatment painful to the patient, or is it something that, I mean, because you're talking about removing part of their skin, it sounds like.
Right. So local anesthesia or numbing, we certainly employ to make people comfortable. So, you know, the numbing medication, when it's appropriately buffered with the right chemicals, we can actually make it quite less painful than, you know, your traditional numbing that you might experience in other avenues. You know, say, for instance, that you're, you know, general practitioner or dentist or what have you. But that's probably the worst part. We always joke with our patients that they can decide what's the worst between the local anesthesia versus the waiting time that it takes for us to just look under the microscope. So really very little pain involved. Local anesthesia is great because it salvages or saves people from having to go into the OR and experience general anesthesia. So that's a great benefit.
Right, and definitely the catching it early as opposed to waiting until it becomes more later stage or intermediate stage melanoma, I'm sure also determines the level of involvement of whatever surgery or removal you're doing. So we've just kind of reached the end of the pandemic. Still a lot of cases, though, being reported in El Paso County of COVID-19. So does treatment, has it been affected by the pandemic, and is it still being affected, and if so, how so?
That's a great question. Right now, fortunately, with the screening protocols in place and obviously the advent of the vaccination, which I encourage people to seek out if they haven't done already, we are able to treat all melanomas. Even at the height of the pandemic, melanoma is something that has so much potential for bad outcomes that we really prioritize removing melanoma as soon as or within 30 days of it being diagnosed by a skin biopsy. So, yes, people can have their melanomas treated and their skin cancers treated. I think all of us, especially in Colorado Springs, all dermatologists included, are very, very good about making that a priority for patients so they don't have to worry themselves that there might be a delay related to the pandemic or its sequela.
And were you worried during the height of the pandemic when patients and people generally were being advised to stay at home, to shelter in place? Were you worried that people would put off their melanoma treatments to the extent that it might, you know, escalate their conditions?
You know, that was certainly a thought at the time of the pandemic. And then now that we're, you know, about it over a year out from when we had a full shutdown last year, we do unfortunately have data that suggests about a 20 to 30% of people who are diagnosed with skin cancer had a delay in diagnosis because of their fears of exposure. And while that may be rightly so, the immediate risks related to spread of melanoma or even non-melanoma skin cancer for that matter actually is much worse and more readily avoidable than say the risks of the virus. So that's unfortunate. However, we're getting back to the normal swing of things and being able to see folks who need to be seen and treated. And for that, we're grateful.
Dr. Lim, we're going to talk more about this. We're continuing the conversation here on The Extra with more of how we're raising awareness about melanoma, your risks, what happens once you get diagnosed, and also how you can prevent melanomas in the first place. That and much more as The Extra continues here on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to The Extra, the show that connects you with the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And today's topic, well, it's an important one, and it is the month to do so. We are raising awareness of melanoma risks, and we're doing so with the board-certified dermatologist at Optum, Dr. Jeffrey Lim. Dr. Lim, so glad you could be with us. Let's get right into it. You have been providing us with such great information. I know last year when we were talking about this during National Melanoma Awareness Month, I myself have had a mole that I was worried about. Two of them actually went to get them checked out and felt such a relief that I got the clearance from your team that things were good. So let's talk about melanomas and prevention. Can melanoma be prevented?
Oh, absolutely. That is the most important aspect of how we counsel many of our patients. And so prevention starts with sun safety, because we know that between 80 to 95% of all skin cancers, melanoma included, are related to ultraviolet radiation from the sun's rays, but also ultraviolet radiation unregulated from the tanning booth. So just be careful about that. Anytime you, if you go for a tan, it triples your risk for melanoma. So sunscreen is important. And, you know, while there's many on the market, I just want to kind of briefly go over, you know, what to look for. There are two different types of sunscreens, physical and chemical sunscreens. Physical or mineral sunscreens are actually, they're like a shield, if you will, on your skin. That's why people, even 10 years ago, before they had these very small nanoparticled, heavy metals, it would look like the Tin Man after they put it on. So mineral sunscreens include those active ingredients, zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. And they're great because they block and they reflect or scatter the rays before they even get to your skin. Now, chemical sunscreens are great too. I like those as well. They have received some interesting press because we know that as with any topicals, we can detect some of those chemicals in our plasma, of our blood. And chemical sunscreens are absorbers. So not only do they absorb into the superficial component of our skin, but they also absorb the UV rays before they can damage your skin. So avobenzone and oxybenzone and benzophenone, any ONEs as suffixes, are things to look at for the active ingredients. And they're all safe. They've all been tried and true and tested by the FDA. But if anyone has any hesitation about sunscreens, I always like to recommend the mineral zinc or titanium sunscreen. So those are the main ingredients. Now, what level of SPF? We always recommend at least 30 or higher. And all of the ones that are regulated by the FDA that have any level of water resistance will say water resistant. There is no such thing as waterproofing. And the reason I say that is because we also need folks to understand that applying the sunscreen, and it's usually between one to shoot two shot glasses for the entire body, so it just gives you an idea of how much, to, you know, adequately cover. But you really have to do it every 2 hours or after you swim or sweat. You know, water resistance, they're tested to be effective for up to 40 minutes of swimming, up to 80 minutes in the water. So, you know, you still need to reapply. And even on a cloudy day when there's 80% of the sun's rays, it's important not to go unprotected on an overcast day, because that too can lead to some skin damage. So, again, SPF 30, you know, broad spectrum, UVA, UVB, something we didn't talk about, but is another component. And then thirdly, reapplication every 2 hours or after you're swimming or sweating.
Let's talk about that UVA, UVB. Is there, what's the difference?
Yeah, so UVA and UVB are two of the three ultraviolet rays that, you know, the sun produces that reach planet Earth, but UVC is filtered by the ozone. So UVA is actually a wavelength that can actually penetrate past the surface of our skin and really do some significant damage to the structural integrity of our skin, as well as induce mutations that lead to both melanoma and non-melanoma skin cancer. They also are the ones that give us those fine lines and wrinkles. So if you're not going to avoid the sun for your risk of skin cancer, a lot of people tend to get worried about their complexion and their youthful appearance to age gracefully. So UVA does penetrate through our windshields or windows at home, through glass, whereas UVB does not. However, while UVB can be filtered by our windshield, it does lead to the superficial crisp burn that we get, you know, when we get red and peel, because it stops at the surface of our skin. And so you can think of it, UVA, as kind of like a baking, you know, where it's more slow and steady, but really does some internal damage. Whereas kind of a surface frying mechanism would be the UVB. And so both hand in hand create significant damage. But the reason why we don't see sunburns after we drive long distances is because the UVB is being filtered by our windshields and windows. It does not mean that we're not getting sun damage. In fact, the sunburn itself is just a way that we know we've had damage, and it can elude us to become more protected.
In fact, I remember one of my worst sunburns I ever had was a skiing sunburn. I didn't think to apply sunscreen while I was skiing, and the sun reflected off the snow. That's something we need to worry about, especially here in Colorado, don't you think?
Oh, my gosh, yes. In fact, skiing, you know, the winter months here in Colorado, we talked about a high UV index and also a higher altitude, and you combine that with the snow, and, you know, snow in its ice form, or this water in its ice form, is reflective. And so not only are we getting it top down, but we're also getting it bounced, that UV radiation bounced all over the place, including from the bottom up. And so it's really important not just to use sunscreen, but protect your eyes. Wear sunglasses, wear the protective goggles when you ski. And then the UPF clothing is a great, you know, alternative. Even better when it's used together with other sun protective measures, because the density of the weave in the fabric offers the equivalent of, say, SPF 30, 50, et cetera. So look for UPF clothing, and that will add another layer of protection.
I was wondering about that, because you do see sometimes people at the pools wearing the longer outfits, and they generally, it sounds like, are made of that special protective weave or clothing. Is that something that you think the U.S. has been slow to catch on with?
You know, certainly slower than Australia. Australia has done a really remarkable job of their public health initiatives. I think we're getting better. And one of the things I will say, there are companies like, for instance, Coolibar, which I have no financial interest, but Coolibar is something that's, you know, marketable and accessible, you know, across the country. But we also have a local brand called No Zero Days that has started to market to our triathletes, to our Coloradans who are out and doing very active things that have UPF clothing. And as an aside, UPF is stands for ultraviolet protection factor and indicates how much UV radiation, both UVB and UVA, a fabric is allowed to, allows the sun to reach your skin. And so, for instance, UPF of 50 fabric blocks about 98% of the sun's rays because you're just flipping that 50 on its head. So 1/50th of those UV rays are able to penetrate and damage your skin. So again, look for UPF clothing as a nice way. Sometimes you can even avoid, sometimes it's hard, especially for kids, to wear sunscreen and reapply it. It can drive parents crazy. So UPF clothing is a great alternative.
Dr. Lim, we need to take a short break. We're going to be talking much more about this. Prevention is such a key part of this equation. When we come back, we'll have that on The Extra. We're back with our final segment of The Extra. It's our show that connects you with issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And the person we're talking to today is our expert on melanoma, Dr. Jeffrey Lim, a board-certified dermatologist with Optum. He's also a Mohs Micrographics fellowship-trained surgeon. And all of that brings expertise to the subject we're talking about today, which is melanoma.
And Dr. Lim, I have this question. It seems like every spring, I'll first of all, the previous fall, I will have put away all the half-used bottles of sunscreen or tubes of sunscreen all over the house and in the cars. And then the next spring, there are also these sales on last year's inventory of sunscreen.
Yeah.
Are those okay to use? Will I get protection, or is this something that has, I guess, a time expiration on it?
Great question. That's not one that's often asked, but it is relevant. I'll be honest, the way that if it's marketed broadly, and still up for sale, there's really not an effective expiration date for most heavy metals. So we talked about mineral sunscreens. So zinc oxide, titanium dioxide, they're just sitting in there. But really the chemical sunscreens, really depends on what chemical is used. That being said, there's such a long shelf life for these that in general, as long as you're using it, you should never reach the supposed expiration date. That being said, you can use these for, I have some that I've carried around in my car and in my office for the last 2 to 3 years and without problem. So great question. There's more data to come on that, but anything that's marketed and approved by the FDA will be safe.
And then finally, Dr. Lim, can you just wrap up for our listeners what Melanoma Awareness Month means to you and why this is of such importance?
Well, that's, it's so important because melanoma is entirely a preventable disease as far as its, impact to people's lives and livelihoods. And, I think the greatest joy that we have in our field is the fact that when we mention the C word, cancer, it's one of the most easily preventative but also easily accessible types of cancers to remove and effectively cure. When folks are doing both their due diligence to protect themselves and their board-certified dermatologists and primary care providers are doing theirs by helping to diagnose and pay attention to it. So we have such a great opportunity here in our country to really not have this be a problem. And so I would encourage everybody, if you haven't had a baseline skin exam, it's important just to establish that. It's not dooming you to annual exams or, twice yearly exams like for other types of healthcare. But it's just to give you an idea of, if anything changes or surfaces from the time that I saw my board certified dermatologist, you can make a significant difference by, preventing an otherwise potentially deadly disease. So hugely important, and I'm so glad we dedicate this month to melanoma awareness and skin cancer awareness. And I hope our listeners have gleaned some information to help arm them to protect themselves.
Right, right, and feel emboldened to go and contact their providers if they have concerns and make sure that they're following up if anything has been raised as an alert. We've been speaking to Dr. Jeffrey Lim, board-certified dermatologist and Mohs Micrographics fellowship-trained surgeon. He is located at 1633 Medical Center Point in Colorado Springs. And if you'd like to schedule an appointment with any member of the Optum Dermatology team, you can reach them at 228-0400. Dr. Lim, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me, Shannon.